everyone. Welcome to the show. Today I have Druther. Is that how you pronounce it?
It is.
You are a member of the Bitcoin Army, and I wanted to hear your perspective on Bitcoin and your story.
Mine's probably a little different than most. Some extra twists and turns that a lot of people don't have.
Well, I would love to hear it.
Kind of started in 2013 or 2014. I had a friend who was into Bitcoin. I asked some questions, probably not as much as I should, and kind of brushed it off like, you know, a lot of people do. I didn't hate it like a lot of people did, but I just, you know, brushed it off as a fad. Back on the whole physical, you can't touch it, right? So I just didn't know how the US dollar worked back then. And then I guess kind of just growing up, kind of grew up poor, right? I mean, as some people did, you know, money was always had a lot of value to me, you know? And then I always thought, I guess in my earlier adult years, that, you know, inflation was, you know, BS. So, you know, I always hated the Fed and their inflation's 2% target and all that. And then I had a friend of mine, started mine in ETH in 2017 with his computer on his, you know, his video card. And kind of, should I get into it? I asked him about Bitcoin mining. He goes, oh, it's not profitable to buy a miner, blah, blah. Right. So I just kind of brushed it off once again. So, and then in New Year's Eve 2020, just right before 2021, I was like, you know, mid lockdown, right? I was like, oh, I'm putting money in my retirement, whatever, but I'm like, I don't really see that going much anywhere. I'm kind of put money into 401k a lot later than I should have been doing. So I was like, okay, I got to make up some ground here, right? So I started to get into crypto in general, started watching BitBoy. I don't know if you know who he is. So, of course, he's a, you know, a shit coiner, right? Let's try to keep it PG.
Yeah, well.
So.
I feel so like I got into that. Like when they show memes about him now, just being like, he's like a junkie. It's, you know.
Oh, yeah.
That's happens when you trade shit coins.
Yeah, I mean, he's had some rough stuff happen to him that wasn't his fault. But at the same time, like, some of that's his own making, right? But anyway, started to. You know, I got, I call it market diaper, you know, market cipher, that, you know, what do you call it? That TradingView plugin, you know, that you have to pay for different indicators. Sorry, that's what it was, trading indicators. And that, and then I got into leverage trading pretty heavy in the 2021 bull run. I bought a bunch of Bitcoin in then, but then I moved it over to an exchange and leverage traded against it, right? So ended up losing all of that over 2021. Kept at it through 2022. I tried some other different trading styles, including one called, what is it called? I mean, some notes here. Market profile. It actually looks kind of like the Matrix even. And looking back, I can probably make it work. It just takes a lot of time. And I still have a day job, right? So I can't do both at once. So kind of
dabbled a little bit of myself. I had dabbled in a little bit of that AI trading, or you try to have the AI trade
for
you. And I didn't do it with much money. It was just a little bit, but I didn't do well with it. So I just gave up shortly afterwards. I'm like,
Oh yeah. So a friend of mine always loved watching George, you know, Crypto's R Us. So I was like, oh, everybody's George. So I just started hodling ship coins and Bitcoin too, though. I started buying Bitcoin then. And actually, and then in 2023, I converted pulled some of my 401k out that I could and put it into to iTrust and a Roth. So then I bought Bitcoin and some other shit coins. So I guess I was starting to trend in the right direction at that point, at least. And then, I guess kind of late 2024, got a message from my company that they're no longer doing the employee stock purchase program with our company stock. And then at the same time, they're changing our 401k match. So I was like, okay, I need to reevaluate this whole situation. So I started doing the deep dive, right? You know, the Saylor deep dive. Started reading economic books and the Bitcoin Standard by Saif al-Din, and then Creature from Jekyll Island and some others. And then I took the plunge and then opened up my Fold. I joined Fold 1st of January, basically. And then ever since then, I sold all my company stock that I had, bought Bitcoin with it. And then dropped my pay contribution down quite a bit because they changed our employee match. So I was only putting in what they match 100% against, because I was like, okay, Saylor's right. Bitcoin at the time had a CAGR of, you know, 60%. So I was like, anything less than that is not even worth it, right? So I only had, I think it was only 2% of my paychecks went into my 401k at that point. And then...
Well, do you think that Saylor was the big shift for you, like listening to his videos or reading the books, like the Jekyll Island too, and
right, yeah, they were contributors, but as far as the big like shift was, it was I can look back, it was a video of Robert Breedlove debating Peter Schiff on Bitcoin. That was a big one. And then I've been listening to Saylor on and off since, you know, he started in 2020. And then, but I was kind of brushed it off. It's, oh, he's a max, he hates everything else, right? And then I started watching more, deep dive into his videos over Christmas break. And then also Rajat Soni, do you know who he is? The Canadian? Yeah, so it was those three that really kind of orange pilled me to be a maxi, I guess.
Uh-huh.
So.
Yeah, and it's when you start to realize, right, that it's the main parts are why Bitcoin is different and how corrupt government is and what inflation really is. Those are the main subjects that make you realize that Bitcoin's not going anywhere and what makes it so different. So it's, and it doesn't matter when you get in. Like, I know a lot of people, you probably do it too, but we all beat ourselves up thinking, oh, I should have done it sooner. And like, why didn't I pay attention? But, you know, you have to go through these steps. You know, you have to.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you have, there's a journey there, and you have to uncover the truth and layers, you know, and things that happen in your life too.
Yeah, and then something else Saylor says is, you know, Bitcoin's got a CAGR of 60%. That beats basically every stock on the planet, you know, except for, you know, an outlier here or there, such as his own stock, you know.
And that's a compound annual growth rate, right?
Yep, exactly. And then at the same time, you know, I've been chart heavy since 2021. I went back and looked at the 2017 bull run, and then also the bear market, and then COVID. And, you know, you could call COVID a pretty, pretty relevant black swan event. And COVID couldn't even take out the 2018 bear market low. It didn't even get that low. So I'm like, well, that's a black swan event. It couldn't even do that. So I'm like, you know, pretty that's safe, true. Right? So
yeah, that's a lot of people really don't.
I mean, it was only a year prior, right? 1 year ago, it couldn't take out that low.
Yeah. So you see that that's like a huge eye-opener, because people flood Bitcoin and there's all this fear, uncertainty, and doubt about it. And you start to get scared away. You start to look at those kind of metrics and you realize that if this is a low point or if this is a black swan event and it can't even break down those lows, then this thing isn't going anywhere, you know? So
exactly.
So what do you enjoy? Like, do you feel like being part of a Bitcoin community and sharing your thoughts, were you somebody who posted a lot on X once you started to get more into Bitcoin? And did you feel like you were seen? And then now do you feel more seen because you're part of a group?
Yeah, and that's actually Bitcoin and the Bitcoin Army and other Bitcoiner groups is actually what got me to posting on X again. And I started, of course, you know, retweeting and hearting and they're liking, and then started replying, and then now I'm starting to post, right? So it's honestly one of the most welcoming groups I've ever been a part of. The people you don't actually know, right? So normally a lot of most times strangers are, you know, don't really accept newcomers a lot of times. So
yeah, and it feels like they're very understanding, and you know, even if it's somebody who doesn't really understand Bitcoin and joins, they're very supportive and very, you know, they're not hating on you for not knowing something. Everyone's just trying to teach and share. So it's just a comfortable place to be. And do you find yourself, you've been talking more in spaces too, right?
I haven't yet.
You haven't?
I've been trying. I haven't been spoken in any spaces, but I've joined a couple.
Okay. So but now that you're doing this, maybe you will.
Yeah, I'm typically kind of shy, but I mean, like I said, I'm an IT guy, but I recently became a manager, so I can't really be shy.
Yeah. That's the funny part. Life forces you to sometimes do things you're not comfortable with. And well, that's nice that you even wanted to speak and join me on this, because that takes a lot of, you know, breaking out of your comfort zone to
absolutely
join a podcast, you know, and just talk.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I started my own business back in 2013 also. So, I mean, I was kind of also, you know, the sales at the same time. So that kind of pushed me back then a lot. You know, I had to learn how to push myself out of my comfort zone and not be shy at that point. So I just got to figure out when to apply it, you know, when it's appropriate, obviously. So
yeah, well, I'd like to hear you speak more on spaces too, because it'd be nice. Like, we love hearing from everybody, because everyone has some sort of insight on whatever we're talking about, and it's just we like hearing all different voices. So as far as your background, you mentioned you were poor growing up. So do you feel when there's financial hardships, when there's fights over finances, when there's things that are stressful to your family that can cause issues between your parents, like that has a profound effect on you?
Absolutely.
And, you know, so see, growing up that way, worrying about your parents and then worrying about yourself as you grow up, and also seeing your parents, I'm not sure, I mean, a lot of people's parents, I don't know how yours were, but they're hard workers, you know, they pay their taxes, they're struggling, you know. So it's why is this the way that our country works? And then when you start to find out these truths about inflation and how money is stolen from you through inflation, you get really mad. You know, you become sort of this you know, this anti-government sort of thing. But that's why Bitcoin is this peaceful revolution, because you feel like you can just exit that theft system. And so I just want to hear how you kind of felt like that shaped you, or did that make you feel like you needed to come up with an answer and figure things out as you got older?
Yeah, well, I mean, so I kind of grew up, depending on which chart you go by, I might be a millennial, I might be a Gen Xer. So I'm like kind of on the border. So I've got the, I was told growing up I was a Gen Xer growing, you know, as I went through elementary school, that millennial wasn't a term yet.
I think I'm a millennial and I just turned 41.
Yeah, exactly. Like, but I didn't learn that until like 10 years ago.
Okay.
I always grew up being told I was a Gen Xer and didn't know otherwise until semi-recently.
And then my husband, who's 4 years older than me, he's like the end of the Gen X. And I'm like the beginning of Y, I guess.
So exactly. Like, so I'm 40 myself. So like, but like I said, I grew up with Gen X values, you know, work hard, you know, pay your taxes, all that, you know. So, and then luckily my family was into, well, my family, we moved away when I was out of our small town whenever I was 8. So, and then they get, you know, my parents got, you know, higher paying jobs and everyone, you know, got nicer cars and I had nicer houses. Right. And then, so got my first computer in 93. So they both got into technology. My dad became a server admin. My mom went into networking, computer networking. So I was always adjacent to computers and technology.
That shows the difference, because you, with your parents that were into that stuff, you had a computer in 93. Mm-hmm. I got my first computer, I think, in 97 or 98. So, right. And my parents knew nothing about that stuff. They were probably the last to know. But I mean, how slow was the dial up back then?
Oh yeah, exactly. Well, yeah, I had dial up, and then my mom, thanks to her networking job, she actually got an ISDN connection in the like 98 to 2000. So all my friends had dial up, and I had a 5 times faster connection than all my friends. So I would always get on Napster and download songs at a higher speed than they could.
Mm-hmm. They're all like, make me a mix.
Yeah, exactly. And I had a DVD burner and they didn't, or CD burner, I mean, and they didn't.
Can you believe how much has changed? Like, we actually had to burn music off of a site and download songs and burn them onto a disc. Like, no kid would even know what the hell we're talking about.
Oh, right. Yeah. Now. And you had that, you know, your book of CD that they won't even get to, you know, they won't even experience that.
I don't even know where mine is. I lost it somewhere. I don't know. It's gone. I don't know if you have yours.
I think I have one buried somewhere just for nostalgia.
Yeah, it was like my meant everything to me. I was like, these are my songs. Mm-hmm. What am I going to do without my case of CDs? You know, like I would drive around and I had my case, and then I feel like one day I just didn't need it anymore. It's just like one day I forgot about it. I think it's at my parents' house. Maybe they threw it out. I don't know. But it's gone, long gone. It's so funny. Oh, yeah, life changes in technology. Look how fast it shifted.
Uh-huh.
You know, when you think about those things, when you think about growing up as a Gen X or Y person, millennial, I guess, is Gen Y.
Yeah.
But we've seen this shift from, like, our parents, like, they had most of their life with no technology. Then all of a sudden they have a little at the end and they're asking us how to use every single thing on their phone, you know, because they're just dying to change. And then we're here and we see this entire thing happen in front of us. Like, we're going from, even the burning CD thing was like, what are you guys doing? You're putting music on a, you know, they were thinking that's insane. But that changed so fast to now where phones are today, where you have every single song in the world at your fingertips and information and AI.
Encyclopedia at your fingertips and AI.
Well, did you ever have an Encyclopedia Britannica?
I did.
Yeah.
I actually got, my uncle always made fun of me growing up because I would literally sit there sometimes on short car trips and read the dictionary to him out loud.
He's like, no.
Yeah. He never stopped me because he knew it would be good for me. But
did he put his earplugs in or something?
No, he was driving. He couldn't do that.
He's like, I got to make sure I'm aware. But no, those encyclopedias, I remember our parents were so proud. They're like, we have our first set of encyclopedias. And it was this leather bound kind of set. Mm-hmm. And I felt like I always loved books. So I was just kind of like, we have these nice books. But God, I remember having to go to the library to like get sources and stuff if I didn't use my encyclopedias or something. And speaking of like the shift in technology that I think is insane now too, is how I had to take Spanish class in junior high. And I have a kid now, he's 13, and he didn't take Spanish in his sixth or seventh grade class. So we were looking into high school because we're like, you're probably going to have to take Spanish in high school or some kind of language, you know, but it's not a requirement anymore.
It wasn't a requirement in my high school, but I did. I took 4 years of German.
Okay.
Because when I was young, my grandparents were in the military and they lived in Germany. So I always call them Oma and Opa, which is German for grandma and grandpa. My son also took German for 2 years of high school too. So he's 17 now. So yeah.
Wow. And how long ago did he take those classes?
Last year and year before.
Okay, so he's just took them. So yeah. The thing that I think is they do offer languages in high school. It's not like they don't offer them at where I live, but it's fascinating because when you have something like Google Translate right now, you could just go up and live ask a person in their language, and everyone has a phone, you know, so it's like you can get reception almost anywhere. It's really not necessary to have to do that. You know, it's like, that's how much has changed where it's not a requirement, where even if it wasn't by you, it definitely was here. Like you had to do it, but now it's not required. So it's interesting how that shifted, because why would you need to do that when you have it right there?
Well, something else I've learned being IT is I've for a long time supported global companies, and most of the world speaks some form or at least a little bit of English too.
When I went to Greece last summer, you know, I know I can speak Greek. My husband does too. Our kids don't. But when we went there, we thought, oh man, our Greek is rusty. This is going to be funny. Hearing us speak Greek, we're going to sound like the people that try to speak English that's not their first language. And once you start talking, it's okay. But I was surprised at how much people realized, even at a restaurant where we're trying to order something and they notice that they could tell we're American. Even if we're, you know, even if we think we sound pretty good, they're like, you guys.
Before you open your mouth.
Yeah.
They know you. Well, how you dress even.
Look at how you dress. Yeah. So they're already like, do you want an English menu? And you're like, oh yeah, thank you. That would make it so much easier. Like every place has an English menu. They have, and every person speaks English. Like they learn English in school in Greece. So that's like a requirement for them because they know how much globally people use the language. So it's really not scary going to other countries and not knowing, because there's always a common, you know, way to interact. So that's definitely a good point.
Oh, yeah.
You've talked a lot about AI too, haven't you? Like with being in IT, do you know, have you been posting about AI?
I post a little bit, but I use Grok quite a bit. Mm-hmm. I never liked ChatGPT because it would always have a political bias in most of its answers, which is really annoying, and I try to be anti-political. Mm-hmm. So that's one thing I really like about Grok, is it's, you know, as Elon said, it's the ultimate truth-seeking, and you can tell by the way it answers.
Do you have the standalone Grok app?
Mm-hmm. I do.
So I love that app. I don't know if you've played with it too much, but there's different personalities of Grok that you could use.
I haven't. I want to play with that. I just haven't sat down and turned them on.
It's actually pretty funny because when you have things, even there's like a therapist option. There's an argumentative option. Like one time, you know what I did with the argumentative that was pretty funny?
What's that?
When everyone was talking about the Bitcoin Core situation. And they're like, what is going on with Core? And like, you know, with this whole debate about the consensus changing.
The OP return stuff?
Huh?
The OP return stuff?
Yeah. They were just, they want to change the code or something, and everyone's freaking out about it. And so I was asking, because I know Bitcoin's not going anywhere. It's like, but I just wanted to know what's the argument here? What are people freaking out about? Is it a rational fear of something? So I was playing I just said like, but won't that like destroy Bitcoin? So I was like doing like that sort of, and it was like,
I'd be a contrarian.
Yeah. It was like, no way, man. Like I can't destroy Bitcoin. It was like giving me all these answers about how and why it really doesn't matter. Cause there's always going to be somebody like people running the code, whether or not they change their, you know, they put a new update out there and people don't want to use it, you know, they'll use other things. So besides it slowing down its scalability, or maybe the amount of things built into Bitcoin, it might slow processes down a little bit, but it's still going to just be Bitcoin. It's like nothing's going to change. Yeah. So all this like talk, everyone's like kind of freaking out. It feels like there's so much talk about it, but I feel like this AI was kind of arguing back with me, being like, all the reasons why that's a stupid argument. And I was trying to be like, but I'm so afraid. It's like you keep getting stuck on this fear of, you know, like funding. They're not going to get funding. Why are you so afraid of that because of this? And it was just arguing with me the whole time.
Yeah.
It's really funny.
Yeah. I think to me, the bigger beef to me is the whole, they blocked Bitcoin Mechanic from being able to post on that, on the GitHub. And then also they marked another post as hateful or something like that. And that was, just because they're not a dev doesn't mean you can't, you know, talk about it. You don't know how it works, you know? Mm-hmm. So, and then also brought up a really good point is, up until recently, we haven't had any other options other than Bitcoin Core as a node, you know. So Bitcoin Knots is becoming popular. So that's good to have multiple, you know, a free market of node software.
So besides people running a node at home, because I have Bitcoin Core on my computer too, and everyone's been talking about Knots, and I'd like to learn about getting that running because I don't have that going right now. And so I would like to, you know, help the decentralization and get that going at my own home. But the Bitcoin Core, yeah, people are going to move away from it. If they feel like they don't want to use that anymore, they're going to use something different. But does every, like, I don't know too much about running a node. Like, is it the miners are running their own node because they're mining, and Core is just a way to validate? Because you're not mining when you're running Core, you're just validating transactions. Right. So you're just supporting the decentralization of the network.
Right.
But when miners are mining, they're not part of Core, they're just mining, right?
Right. So they submit, when they mine a block and they submit their, what they think their answer is, they submit it to a node, and then a node will verify it if it's correct or not. You know, of course, most of the time it says, no, it's not correct. Keep trying again. But
all those miners typically send to Core, or do they send?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it would be, they'd point to a pool, which points to the node.
Okay.
So I'm running you can run a pool and a node on the same machine, but yeah.
Okay.
Because I'm actually running my own node, and I have some home lottery miners that point to my own pool.
Okay, so yeah, I have some lottery. I have those crypto miners too, and I have them. I think I have them. God, where did I even? Now I can't even remember where I set them up. That's awesome. Is that bad?
As long as you're still working, that's fine.
I mean, it's still working, and I know I have it set up to go to a wallet if I ever win a block, but I'm like, where the heck is it going? But I think it's fine. I think it's okay, hopefully. But yeah, I'm doing those. I'm doing the lottery miners, and I want to get off of Core. So yeah, Knots is something that I want to get into, just because, yeah, you don't want somebody. So what is the reason they want to change it? I'm trying to remember. I feel like I remembered, but I forgot so quick. What is it because of not blocks time?
They don't want people arbitrarily filling blocks with non-transaction data.
Is it about ordinals?
It's related to ordinals.
Okay.
But it's a field where you can just put arbitrary data. Like, you can put a description there of what your transaction's for, or you can put whatever in there, and it's limited to 80 bytes right now. And they want to take that limit away. I mean, you can change the limit right now, but the issue is, like, we like the 80 byte limit. We don't want a whole block full just because somebody wants to put a JPEG in there effectively, right?
Right. Yeah, so that's what I think, that's what keeps it scarce. So maybe if people still do want to do those things and they're able to do it with the current size of how many bytes there are, then those things would technically be of more value because they're taking up block space, you know?
Right.
But then if you start to create where it's massive, then you're like, okay, now you're just creating spam.
Right, exactly. And that's the idea. They don't want, spam would be non-transaction data. And that's what a lot of people don't want to do. It's a monetary network.
Yeah. I get that. Yeah, I wouldn't want to change that, because then I think the worry is that if they can go through and have this consensus to change that sort of code, then what makes them think that in the future they won't want to change other things? So that's why they want to separate more from Bitcoin Core, because you want to stick with a node that doesn't want to change rules and wants to stick
right
to Bitcoin's always been.
Yeah. And then Peter Todd recently talked about putting a tail emission in there like Monero, and that would make it go over 21 million. And that's a huge red flag.
Who is this? Peter Todd?
Peter Todd, yeah.
I forget who he is.
He's an OG Bitcoiner, like 2010 OG. And he's the one that recent HBO documentary suspected he was Satoshi.
Well, that's the guy. Yes, that's why it sounded familiar. Okay.
Yeah.
So he wants to do what now?
He mentioned maybe doing a tail emission, which would be done on top of the block subsidy and the block fees, add a tail emission on top of that. And that would eventually make it go over 21 million.
Well, that's messed up.
Yeah, exactly. And that's one of the hardcore, you know, Bitcoin rules.
I mean, Bitcoin is valuable because of its scarcity. And that's what makes you think that maybe, okay, I have conspiracies. Are you ready?
Yeah, let's hear them. I have some friends are, and conspiracies are only that until they're proven true, right?
Right. So I don't think he's Satoshi, right? I don't think Peter Todd
No,
is
I don't
Satoshi,
either.
but the documentary tries to prove heavily that he is. And I think that I definitely don't think he is, but I think for people suspecting that he is, I think maybe to suggest something like this would actually never work. It would actually not go through. So I think it would take people off of the, it would pretty much like distract people from the trail and be like, okay, no, he can't be Satoshi because Satoshi would never
Yeah.
do that. So I
Right,
wonder if he's just
exactly.
kind of like doing this on purpose to be like, see, I'm not
Yeah.
Satoshi because.
Yeah, that crossed my mind too, that could be a distraction to be like, "Hey, I'm not Satoshi here, and here's why," you know.
Like, would Satoshi actually do what I'm proposing?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly, right?
That's my,
Exactly.
yeah. What the hell? So maybe he is Satoshi after all. I don't know. Just kidding.
And then on your interview with Sasquatch, I guess on the who is Satoshi, I guess. I kind of agree that it could be a time traveler because it's just electrons, right? It's not a, you know, that's all we ever know. Satoshi is, you know, just
Yeah.
internet posts and emails.
I think the reason why people even say that about him being a time traveler, because it's just the way that everything happened with all this, you know, it makes you think like with all of the research leading up to Bitcoin's creation, there were so many people like Adam Back who had, you know, contributed to creating parts of what Bitcoin is today. But like all the research in cryptography that led to its actual creation, it wasn't like what I was thinking was like, so what mathematical problem did Satoshi really solve? But it was more like he solved the consensus and the trusting, the not having to trust anybody. So he solved the Byzantine generals problem where, you know, because nobody trusts each other. So he made it so that it's built on proof of work and nobody has to trust anybody because of the way that it works. So all the pieces of the puzzle fit together the way he created, the way he put it out there. And the reason that it's crazy about the time traveler thing is because when that first Genesis block was made, it was during the great financial crisis and he encoded the chancellor on the brink of second bailout, you know, so it was like almost like, why now? Did you already have this figured out years ago, but now you were pissed off enough to post it? Or did you just come back in time specifically to that date and be like, here you go, this is the date that we're gonna make it go live? Because why that date? Was it like, I'm sure he didn't just solve it on that perfect date where that news article came out. So that just kind of makes you wonder.
Yeah, it's always, you know, it's always going to be a question. And I mean, I also agree that he had to disappear. He couldn't be a publicly known figure, or they'd arrested him and, you know, it'd be dead.
Yeah. Well, that's what I think, even when I think back to when Elon created PayPal, you know, when they saw something new coming out and they know who it is, they can come to you, they can say, we're going to do this, and they buy it off you. And because maybe at the time, I think people were saying that PayPal was coded in C++ coding, like the same thing that Bitcoin is. But then whoever bought it from him, they wanted it to work with, I don't know if it was Linux computers or get it off of Linux. I don't remember which one of the two, but they wanted to change it to a different, the regular, the more normal code that all computers use instead of the C++. So it was like kind of interesting to me that that's how PayPal started, but then they wanted to switch it away to a more universal code that everybody
Right.
can use and understand, I think. So I don't know, I'm not 100% accurate, but I feel like I'm pretty sure about that fact.
Yeah, I haven't dug into PayPal into the early years, so I'm not quite sure on that, to be honest.
But yeah, it's like it shows you that when you're the face of something, when you're the face of a corporation or a company, you will have temptation and people will try to buy you out, and or you could be attacked or all those different things. So it was really important that Satoshi disappeared. And the fact that even the time traveler thing, going back to the conspiracy, is like the fact that he knew that this would become what it is, and hid himself from the very first message to the point where there's no trace, you know, made sure. It's like, how would you even have the foresight to know that this would even be anything, even that it would actually work or people would use it, to be that secretive and care that, or like, you know what I mean? Be that careful and then disappear.
Yeah,
So it's just like, it
and
makes
that's
you.
why people. And that's why they think he's one of the original cypherpunks was because of how secretive he was. Because they
That's
were all in
funny.
the cryptography and, you know, they all used Tor and stuff like that.
I feel like we always think like, what a legend, you know, to be able to do this however it happened. That's why it feels like a story. That's why I think a lot of us, we like to share it with people that don't know, because besides how awesome Bitcoin is, it's got like a superhero origin story. So it's kind of like, how do we not want to tell this to people and be like, you guys, this actually happened. This is pretty cool. They should make a movie about it so that everyone could be like, holy shit, this happened. This is real life. But, you know, then it would be mainstream adoption tomorrow because everyone would be like, this was a box office hit and now everyone wants Bitcoin.
And I'd be sad that sets are expensive.
Yeah,
to
right.
buy.
So whoever knows about it now is going to be like, damn it, we can't make this movie because we won't be able to collect as much, you know?
Exactly, exactly.
But one day it's going to come out. Like, we're going to see it one day. There's going to be a Satoshi movie because it's like definitely a legendary story. And that's funny that my theory about Peter Todd is that he's trying to just tell people, like, stop asking me. I'm not him. Look what I'm trying to do.
Yeah, right. I'm going to break Bitcoin here. I'm going to make a Taylor mission.
He can't do this thing that he's talking about, right? This is like impossible, right?
Well, I mean, the node runners would have to adopt it too.
Right.
And then, of course, if you make it more than 21 million, then nobody's going to want it because then it's no longer scarce.
So it would create a fork.
Right, essentially, yeah.
Would it? I don't know. Because I feel like if it, because I don't know how the Bitcoin Cash and Bitcoin SV, were they trying to change the code and then it worked? So if he tries to do this, but it doesn't work, would it create this fork? Or would it just not?
Yeah, it would create a hard, it would create a hard fork, yeah. Because it create, it, you know, breaks the original consensus rules.
And then it would be the next stage of shitcoin traders that would try to buy Peter Todd's coin because they saw the HBO documentary thinking he's Satoshi. I feel like Satoshi made a new one.
Another Satoshi conspiracy I like is John Nash was Satoshi. So he's a, you ever seen the movie A Beautiful Mind?
Yes.
That was John Nash.
I love that movie.
Mm-hmm. So he's a famous cryptographer and mathematician from the 50s, and he wrote code. And then in the 90s, he wrote a paper about asymptotic money in 1995, I think.
Well, I want to watch that movie again because, you know what? I saw it, I think I saw it after I found out about Bitcoin, but I wasn't as deep into it, and I would appreciate it so much more now. Like, once you really know about Bitcoin and everything, I think you look at it in a different light when you actually, because I do remember the cryptography and I do remember being into crypto at the time, but that was like my early days. I wasn't like full on maxi watching this movie.
Yeah, I had to rewatch it too.
I remember that scene where he saw that girl walk into the bar and he said something about like who should go talk to her, but then nobody will win. And he went through all these scenarios.
Mm-hmm.
It almost, I think, reminded me, which now that's why I want to rewatch it, because that scene reminded me of the Byzantine general's problem and how it was solved. And I think that's where he had his epiphany, was like that scene in the movie.
It could be.
So that's interesting because it kind of, I don't know if it reminded me, it just reminded me. I don't know if it's even the same thing, but that's just what, that's why I want to rewatch it, because that's just, that was an incredible movie. Wow. Thank you for bringing that up.
Of course. Of course.
And I love the music in that movie too.
It was good. Yeah, it was a good soundtrack too.
Uh-huh. And it was, so that person, like, cause I remember at the end, like he went crazy, which was sad, you know, because he was so smart that it was like he started to kind of go like schizophrenic or something like that. So what year, I wonder what year he, I don't know what year that would have been going down. So people assume he's Satoshi. I wonder what.
Well, him going crazy, I think, was in the early 60s, late 50s, early 60s.
Okay. So would he be like that crazy to figure out, you know what I mean? Like,
he lived until like 2013 and 2014, and he even became a computer programmer. He
shit,
learned how to
really?
Code.
This is something I want to dive into.
Uh-huh.
Holy crap. Because you know what? Like, yeah, it takes someone crazy to figure out a problem that nobody else, you know what I mean? Like, could figure mm-hmm. out, because you have to think outside the box. You have to have a beautiful mind.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, you got to think all these other people who are, they think is Satoshi. Did any of them have any economics background? Because clearly Satoshi did.
So this guy did have economics background.
Yeah. In 1995, I think he wrote a paper on asymptotic money that had an asymptotic supply schedule.
I love
you know? Yeah.
This is a theory I have not heard.
If you Google it, there's a one page that there's like 19 reasons John Nash was Satoshi or something like that.
So damn it, they already made a Satoshi movie. It's called A Beautiful Mind.
Maybe
it's
it'll be part two.
Done.
Maybe it's part two.
Yeah, I know. They have to put him in a hood and bring him back. Russell Crowe's got to come back.
Yeah.
What the hell? That's so funny. I love this idea. I want to watch it again. Like, I'm going to see if my husband wants to watch it tonight.
There you go.
So cool. That's the kind of stuff I like to hear, you know? It's like we all have these like crazy ideas, and I never heard that theory before. So that's awesome. I like that way better than Peter Todd.
Yeah, exactly. That was more just circumstantial too. the HBO one.
Yeah, I think they just wanted to, I don't know, it's just showing the connection. I think there was a connection between him and Adam Back, and they were almost trying to be like catching Adam Back, trying to show like, does he know something? Is he Satoshi? Does he know that Peter Todd's Satoshi? But I think I liked so much watching that documentary, not because of what they said, who they thought it was, but more because of Adam Back as a person who is, even the fact about the Satoshi emails that he was getting, he didn't want to release them, and people find that suspicious, but I like what he said about, there's like a rule in cryptography or in computers that like, if you have to ask somebody's permission to release something. And he's like, he wasn't around, so I couldn't ask him. So I didn't feel like it was my place to release it.
Yeah, absolutely.
But then I think eventually he did to like break, what is his name? Craig?
Craig Wright.
Didn't he eventually release it just to destroy him? Because he keeps claiming his Satoshi.
Yep. I think it was just last fall too.
I think so. Yeah. So I think that was amazing that out of all the times that he refused to release him, he's like, all right, I got to do this now so we can prove this guy is not Satoshi.
Yeah, exactly. So, exactly.
That was pretty incredible of him.
Finally shut him down.
Yeah. But the fact that he was so, he knows, everyone knows, even if there are people out in the world that do know who it was, they understand why it's important to not speak of it. Because for this person to stay away for as long as they did and not come back is unbelievable. And they're protecting that, because why wouldn't you? Like, if you do, you wouldn't say anything.
Yeah, I mean, just there was in the, I think 2013 or so, there was a guy making actual coins that had a private key and public key on them, you know, and sold them as, you know, as the Bitcoin, the dollar value, and he got arrested for being a money transmitter.
Really? See, so it's like anything you're doing that's like against the rules, you're going to get attacked. And exactly. That's why Bitcoin was attacked so much over the years. Bitcoin would be attacked because people's opinions are swayed by media. So
absolutely,
media can constantly be saying, you know, Bitcoin's dead, and you know what I mean? Like, it's scary, it's risky, all the things that they scare people about, that, you know, China's shutting down their mining operation, all the stuff that even the crypto exchanges, how they went down. They don't really tell you, oh, by the way, it wasn't Bitcoin that crashed. It wasn't Bitcoin that got hacked. It was all of these shady people that are dealing deals on the side with politicians they shouldn't be.
Additional finance scams.
Yeah. And it's like, those are the ones that are getting hacked. And those are the ones that are doing shady things. That's what lost your money. It wasn't Bitcoin that lost your money.
All the ones that crashed all had paper Bitcoin.
Yeah. Yeah. And they were pushed. The funny part was, too, that they were heavily pushed by media. They were like convincing people, like, trust FTX. Look, we have a stadium named after it. Look, Tom Brady is promoting it. Larry David. Everybody's like talking about FTX. Like, it's like now we're on this like path to like infinity bull run hyper Bitcoinization. That's what it felt like. And then all of a sudden, it felt like Luna got attacked, like choke point 2.0 happened. FTX crash, but it was like all this stuff what it felt like was orchestrated to get people's hopes up about crypto and then destroy them so that you could lose confidence in crypto and run away.
I think Elizabeth Warren was part of the choke point 2.0 happened because she had relationship with SBF, so she didn't want to, you know, ruin her public image.
Yeah, I think she had connections, and so did something about his parents, I think, had connections. They were politicians. Oh, yeah. Oh, and yeah. I remember thinking, I got so pissed off when I found out. Because you always think politicians are crooked, and, you know, there's, you know, they're like modern day mobsters, you know, they're taking payouts, and, you know, I watched Ozark, I know what's up. So
exactly. Exactly.
But but when I found out about how something along the lines of when there was some kind of bomb that went off, I don't know if it was in Poland or somewhere by Ukraine, there was some explosion, and all of a sudden the government was like, we need to send money out there for aid. This just happened. We need to, like, this is urgent. And then this money gets sent, you know, the government approves aid to get sent over because there was a risk of, you know, war and this and that happened. And then you find out that the money from there, like, I think it was Ukraine, would store their funds into FTX US. So,
what?
Yeah. So I was pissed because there was like a, you know, because blockchain, you know, it's like, you know, so what happened was the government, every time they would send aid, it would go to Ukraine, then Ukraine would store their money here, and then here they would fund politicians.
Wow.
So it was like this triangle of like money laundering that was like, we need to send aid, but then we're going to store it here. And now we're going to promote FTX some more money. And then we're going to donate to different political parties. And then we'll crash that sucker, you know? And then we'll attack the entire industry afterwards, after we just funneled a bunch of government money in there for under the guise of, you know, we need to help with this war, because everyone knows wars make money, and there's just a lot of nobody knows where this money goes. And we could see that with
Oh, yeah.
WWE. This money is spent nonstop with zero receipts. There's never any necessary proof of receipt when they spend anything. They just kind of can
Oh,
take
yeah.
whatever they want. So this is not a conspiracy. This is truth. Like, this is happening.
Right.
Money is going in the hundreds of billions all over the place, and nobody even knows what it's going to. Like, it's literally untracked, and nobody has to prove where they spent it. So
And it's
that
our
is,
money.
yeah. And it's our money, because even though it's like that silent tax, because it's our money, because they're creating more money, making our dollar less valuable. So now life costs us more every single day, because they're just eating away. They're just like, they're creating money. So every time they would send money for these wars that they would eventually steal most of. I mean, really, honestly, like even recently on the FT on the Fox News thing with Elon and Doge, they were talking about how when you peel back the layers of some of these fundraisers and different things that they're supposedly spending money on, sometimes out of even like cancer foundations or whatever he mentioned, was 15 or sometimes 10 or 15 cents on the dollar goes to the actual organization, and the rest nobody. Or sometimes he says you peel the onion all the way back and there's zero that ended up going to it. And that there's no proof. Even about Save the Pandas, he was talking about Save the Pandas. He was like, they create,
Show me one panda.
yeah, he said, show me one panda. He's like, I can't even get one picture. He's like, send me a picture from like National Geographic. I don't care. Send me something. But nobody, they can't even send a picture of a panda just to say, you know. So it's like they're just all these fake, you know, fundraisers for all these different things that aren't even real. So that just shows you know, we thought it was more conspiracy before, but it's showing to be more true as time goes on, especially with Doge and uncovering this theft. So that makes it even more suspicious when you think about the paper trail leading from, you know, Ukraine to FTX to back to politicians, and it was orchestrated. Like, it's super, and that's what makes you feel like that anarchy vibe. It makes you feel like
Oh
you're,
yeah.
you know, you're like, I trusted you. I trusted you my whole life. I tried to be a good person, a good citizen. I follow all your rules. And then you guys just go and screw people over, not just me, but my parents over the years, you know, like your
Oh yeah.
families, everyone you've seen suffer, anyone who's struggling right now, and they're, you know, their lives are not, you know, they're working too hard, they can't enjoy life, you know. It pisses you off, you know. You're
Oh yeah.
And that's why with Bitcoin, we do stand by these rules that Bitcoin has. We don't want to change the rules. We don't want to allow Peter Todd or Bitcoin core devs to switch things up, because we're like, no, it works. And they say, if it ain't broke, don't fix it, right? So
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
what are you
Exactly.
messing around with? You know, just because people want to post ordinals and inscriptions, and you know, it's like, so what? It could be like the Ethereum of NFTs, of like 8,000 NFTs a day, you know.
2021, when it was just as expensive to Bitcoin as it was ETH. It was 20 bucks or so a transaction, no matter, even if it was tiny. If
Yeah.
you're trying to send 100 bucks, 20 bucks is expensive to send it.
Right. Yeah, it's crazy. I don't understand, like that whole craze was so, it just made you feel like it was such a like a shit coin of digital. Like, a lot of us thought, I got tricked. I thought it was going to be, oh, the NFTs are the new thing, like Bitcoin's a thing and crypto's a thing, but NFTs are the newest thing that nobody really knows that much about, and you feel like you're so early to the game, and then you just lose your money. So it's like, okay, that's fun. And who
Luckily, I
knows?
didn't dabble into those.
I mean, like, the thing is I do think that there's interesting things going forward, but I think a lot of this stuff can be built on Bitcoin instead of being built through some shady rug pull situation. But I like a lot of what was happening. I like some of the ideas that were happening in that space. But like, as far as a Lightning Network type idea, like a layer two on Bitcoin, there was this one app where you would walk to earn crypto. And I was doing that, and of course got rug pulled. You know, I should have just taken it and run, you know, but I did. I took some. But at the time, I thought it was such a cool idea, because it would benefit the healthcare system, because the more people are getting healthy and walking and staying active, you're actually able to not have to go to the doctor so much because you're taking care of yourself,
right.
You're actually exercising. So it's like benefiting that. And then in turn, you're earning some kind of crypto, which it would be cool if you're earning sats by walking, you know, instead of it being some other crypto. And then it keeps track of this. Somehow you earn sats for your activity. You're putting in that proof of work or something. Mm-hmm. And then you're also helping the healthcare system because you're not sick and never moving. You know, you're just actually going out there. So it was a cool idea. I definitely think that there's something to that. And I think that the future will have apps like that to get people incentivized to move and be active and be healthy. So I'm looking forward to things like that coming out in Bitcoin in different layers. And I think that
absolutely. Would be possible. Yeah. I mean, you think instead of getting a discount, they could just pay you over here instead. I mean, you know, and motivate you to do that. Right. So,
right. Cause the healthcare companies or, you know, insurance companies that have to pay out so much money to pharmaceuticals and doctors, why wouldn't they rather pay you some sats to get your ass moving, you know, and maybe go to your physical therapy appointment, you know, like people have other things and they're like, no, I don't, I did it one day. It didn't work, you know, but it's like, if you actually incentivize people to take care of their health, it could help, you know, actually unburden themselves from all the money they're paying, you know, to doctors and pharmacies and stuff like that. Because really, just, you know, moving and changing your diet and all these different things. So there could be like things included in, we have an app that tracks that you are, losing weight or something. You know what I mean? So it's like it's showing that you're eating better foods, you know, making better choices maybe. So those could be things that could incentivize, insurance companies. Because you think who would be the company that would pay out these sats, you know? But it would be somebody incentivized to do so. So it's an interesting future and you just never know.
Oh, yeah. And I see Bitcoin changes a lot of people to be more healthy and all that, too. Absolutely. So,
yeah, because when you don't have hope for the future, you don't really care to take care of yourself too much.
Yeah, exactly. You got food.
Yeah, that's amazing. Yeah, there's so many interesting ways this will change. And just like it didn't, like we couldn't visualize walking around without our giant case of CDs, you know, to what it is today, not many years later. And it's moving so much faster than that. You can see that just from the AI shift in the last 4 years. So compared to the CDs changing to phones now, how we have it, just seeing how the last 4 years, like in the AI usage part of our lives, has grown so dramatically. So I can't imagine what another 4 years is going to be like.
AI is going to change a lot in the next 4 years. It's going to start taking jobs probably in the next year, if not already. I mean, a lot of people already.
It's going to start taking jobs, but then they better start paying people to work out all day.
Exactly. Exactly.
You know, it's like you can't go work at your job, but you can be really healthy and you can earn some sats and live your life that way and not be, have the robots do the robot work.
I mean, at my company right now, we're looking at adding AI to do live translation to our call center agents. You know, so they can just speak English and everything, you know, because it's hard to find people in, you know, Eastern Europe that speak Italian and or French, or, you know, when their native languages, you know, Serbian or Russian or whatever, you know, wherever you are, you know, in Eastern Europe.
That's incredible. And then I try to think of it in my profession because I'm a hairdresser. I'm like, if I can get a Tesla bot to cut hair and color hair and do your hair like I do, and I can train it and it would actually learn from me, and if it's able to, I'm like, wouldn't that be nice? I could just hire a robot, because I can't find workers. I feel like at my salon, it's hard to find people to work and people that can learn and people that have talent, because it's really, really hard. So I'm like, if I can hire a robot and teach it, you know, since it'll
if it's 2 years of somebody's salary, that pays off in 2 years. That's a huge ROI. Companies would kill for something that fast.
Yeah. Even if it could just blow dry clients for me. And cut down, you know what I mean? It's like, imagine, that would be so cool. Then I could podcast more often. I'll just have my robot at work. It'll be like
my version of me.
It'll learn all my craft, and then I'll just do podcasts.
Yeah, some people, I guess shitcoiner, I'm not gonna say which one, but he's got an AI bot that he trained with himself. So now you can pay to join his service, and you can talk to his AI. It's trained to talk like him.
That's crazy. Well, that's what mine will talk like I do. Like, so mine will learn to cut hair with me and just talk like me, and
it'll mimic your voice and everything.
Yeah, it'll be super creepy. My husband won't like it very much. He's gonna be like, this thing looks like a, doesn't have hair. It looks like a silhouette of a human, and it sounds like he, this is freaking me out. But it'd be like, hey, you know, it's like cloning yourself in a way, like a digital clone that can do the same thing you do. So I think it's cool. I don't know. People are super afraid of that stuff. But I feel what I think about the shift that's happening is that there's going to be better things that are going to come out. I do feel like the world is shaping for the future because there's a sound money out there and there's people that are just gravitating towards that and that world. And I think that the AI, it's going to happen whether you like it or not. People like to say like, don't trust that, don't do that. I'm like, okay, so people that don't want to get an Alexa in their house because it's listening to you, well, your phone is listening to you at all times as well. So unless you're shutting that thing off completely and turning off its power, like, do you think that you're not being listened to by some sort of, you know, if the thing listens to you and knows what you were talking about? You talk about a washer and dryer and it's on your freaking Google search feed, you know?
And then an hour later, it's, you're on your ads everywhere.
Yeah, it's in your ads. So it's like, it's listening to you. You don't have to be on it. It's just kind of in the background. So you're worried about an Alexa, but it's already in your hand at all times.
Mm-hmm.
And then, yeah, so when you worry about AI, it's like already a Pandora's box situation. You can't put it back. We're not gonna go backwards. So, just kind
if you
of
don't, fun. Your enemy will.
Yeah.
From a country's perspective.
True. Yeah, and that's why it's like you just have to. We're kind of like you just have to think of it in a way like we're lucky to be living in a time where we could see this massive shift and change and get to witness these things that are happening, because it's just kind of cool. So just think of it in a cool way and just get to experience it, and try not to be scared, you know, and just have fun.
Yeah. Well, in IT, you have to learn to pivot fast with technology. So I've learned to over the years to adapt and overcome. You know, you just have to roll with it. If you don't, you'll get swallowed and you won't have a job anymore. And that's what people are afraid of, I think, is that it's going to take their job.
Yeah, I think people are so afraid. They're very afraid of that. But I think, I mean, just like you said, you got to pivot and change, and there's going to be always new opportunities, right? It's not going to be like now you can't do anything ever again. Like, there's going to be so many jobs that are created in different ways.
Yeah, it creates new jobs in the process.
And to use more human creativity, something that you could actually use your brain for, craft more things that would be of more value to people that, I don't know, anything. Like, I think that we can't imagine what kind of jobs there would be available. I mean, maybe there's going to be, this is a weird, stupid idea. I don't know why I'm going to say it, but I'm like,
let's hear it.
Why do I do this to myself? This is dumb.
Hey, I do the same thing.
It's just the way my mind went, and I'm like, I'll just do it. I'm like, who knows? Maybe like somebody will be like, oh, my robot's sitting at home and it's lonely. I'll pay you to go hang out with my robot for a while. Who knows if that will be a job?
I mean, if they ever become sentient, that'd be a real thing. Like,
yeah.
My wife wanted to get another dog because she thought our dog was lonely, so now we have a second dog.
Yeah. So it's like, you know, you want company for that thing. Or what if you're like, hey, somebody like Jeff Booth, you know, somebody that's like a really good speaker, be like, hey, go show my robot a few things. Go teach my robot, like,
yeah, exactly,
how you act and what you say and like things that, you know, show your personality for the day. We'll pay you whatever much money to go have my robot kind of like be like Jeff Booth, or who knows? I don't know. Whatever. But it just be its friend for a while so it can be nice to humanity or something.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
I don't know. It's like, what if it gets bored at home by itself all day?
It might.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's, I'm glad you did. You just laugh at my crazy.
No, I mean, if it becomes sentient, it would be just, you know, it would be like a human. It could get bored, just like my dog right here getting bored.
Yeah. I mean, it's true. It's like, it might be like, you're not giving me enough work to do. I need to learn more hairdos. What the hell?
Right.
I need 700 things. I need more.
I need a 701.
Yeah, this is not enough. You need to engage me.
And that's how I feel. Like, I'm wanting to learn more now than I have in my whole life. And I've always been learning, you know, so it's just getting more thirst for knowledge, I guess, as I keep going.
Yeah, it's addicting.
Absolutely.
It is. Well, thank you so much. We've talked about so many amazing things today. I can't wait to share this. This has been an incredible conversation. You could definitely be my guest again sometime if you want to talk
great,
about
great.
Any conspiracies or any kind of, I loved it. Anything to get to know about you and Bitcoin is just, it's been a really fun time. So I can't wait to share it, and I'm going to tag you in it when I share it too.
Awesome. Awesome. Thank you so much.
Yes. And I hope you have a really great rest of your day.
You too.
And I would have even done it longer, but I do have another guest afterwards. the only reason. At least it's like a good amount. Like, I think an hour is
right.
Because sometimes when it's too long, then people might be like, they can't listen to the whole thing. So it's a great amount of time. And it was so much fun. So it was a great conversation.
Yeah, I agree. Thank you. I enjoyed it too.
Awesome. I'm glad you had a good time. And you should definitely speak more because it's a lot of fun.
Oh, thank you. I will. I'm going to start joining some more spaces now.
Okay. Sounds good. Have a good day.
You too.